He wondered if over the intervening time the meaning of this joining could have been taken to mean marriage instead of its original intent. As they sat watching the vast landscape, Warren said, "The prelate has been reading prophecies and histories that talk about the pebble in the pond." Richard's ears perked up. He remembered Kaelin singing him a song about skreelings that mentioned the pebble in the pond. Warren hadn't studied these prophecies before and hadn't been able to piece together their importance as of yet. "Do you know what the wizard's second rule is?" Richard asked. "Second rule? Wizards have rules? What's the first?" Richard looked over. "Do you remember that night Jedediah broke his leg, and I told you that you had carpet ash on you, and you tried to brush it off? I was using the wizard's first rule." Warren frowned. "You think on it, Warren, and let me know what you figure out. In the meantime, it's important that you speed up the search for the information I asked you about."
"Well, it will be a little easier, now that Sister Becky is sick every morning and won't be looking over my shoulder."
"She's pregnant," he said, in answer to Richard's questioning frown. "Do many of the sisters have children?"
"Sure," Warren said. "But with all the young wizards around who can no longer go to the city, the sisters help out with their needs so they can study."
Richard gave Warren a suspicious look. "Is Sister Becky's child yours?" Warren blushed furiously.
"No."
He kept his eyes to the city.
"I'm waiting for the one I love."
"Pasha?" Richard said. Warren nodded. Richard looked down at the Palace of the Prophets and the city that surrounded it.
"Need."
"Warren, do all the children of men with the gift inherit it?"
"Oh, no. It's said that many thousands of years ago, before the old and new world were separated, many had the gift. But over time, those in power methodically killed off young ones with the gift so they would have no one to threaten their rule. They also withheld the required teaching. It used to be that fathers taught their sons, but as fewer were born with the gift and it skipped more and more generations, those who knew the way jealously guarded their knowledge. That's the reason the Palace of the Prophets was created, to help those with the gift who had no teacher. As time went on, the gift was bred out of the race of man, the way you breed a trait out of an animal. This gave the wizards who held power less and less opposition all the time. Now that the trait is so bred out, one born with the gift is exceedingly rare. Maybe only one child in 1,000 fathered by a wizard is born with the gift. We're a dying breed."
Richard looked to the city again, then to the palace. His eyes locked on the palace, Richard slowly rose to his feet.
"They're not seeing to our need," he whispered. "They're using us as breeding stock."
Warren stood, his brow wrinkled.
"What?"
"They're using the palace, the young men at the palace, to breed wizards." Warren's brow furrowed deeper.
"Why?"
Richard's jaw muscles flexed.
"I don't know, but I intend to find out."
"Good," Warren said with a grin.
"I need an adventure."
Richard gave him a cold look. "Do you know what adventure is, Warren?"
Warren nodded, the smile still on his face. "An exciting experience."
"Adventure is being scared to death and not knowing if you will live or die, or if the ones you love will live or die. Adventure is being in trouble you don't know how to get out of."
Warren fumbled with the braiding on his sleeve. "I never thought about it like that."
"Well, you think on it," Richard said, "because I'm about to start an adventure."
"What are you going to do?"
"The less you know, the less adventure you'll have to worry about. You just find out the things I need to know. If the veil is torn, we're all going to have a never-ending adventure."
"Well," Warren said with a twinkle in his eye, "I found out at least one thing of help then."
"The Stone of Tears?"
Warren nodded with a grin. "I found out there is no way you could have seen it. It's locked behind the veil. In a way, it's part of the veil."
"Are you sure? Are you sure I couldn't have seen it?"
"Positive. The Stone of Tears is the seal that keeps the Nameless One locked in his prison of the dead, in the underworld. He can rule the souls of the dead there with him, but he cannot come to this world. The Stone of Tears seals him there."
"Good," Richard said with a relieved sigh. "That's great, Warren. Good work."
He gently gripped Warren's robe and pulled him closer.
"You're sure? There's no way the Stone of Tears could be in this world."
Warren confidently shook his head. "None. It's impossible. The only way for the Stone of Tears to be in this world would be for it to come through the gateway."
Richard felt his flesh beginning to tingle.
"Gateway? What's the gateway?" Well, the gateway is what the name implies. A passage. In this case, a passage between the world of the living and the world of the dead. It's magic of both worlds, a passage constructed of magic. The gateway can only be opened with both additive and subtractive magic. The Nameless One has only subtractive, since he is in the underworld, so he can't open the gateway. The same way someone in this world cannot open it, because we have only additive magic.
Bumps were rising on Richard's arms. But someone in this world, someone with both forms of magic, could open the gateway?
Well, sure, Warren stammered. If they had the gateway, but it has been lost for over 3,000 years. It's gone.
He gave Richard a self-assured smile.
We're safe.
Richard wasn't smiling. He grabbed Warren's robes in both hands and yanked his face close.
Warren, tell me the gateway isn't called the Magic of Orden. Tell me the gateway isn't the Three Boxes of Orden.
Warren's eyes slowly expanded to the size of gold pieces.
Where did you hear that name for it?
He whispered in a disquieted tone.
I'm the only one in the palace besides the prelate and two other sisters who are permitted to read the books that call the gateway by its ancient name.
Richard gritted his teeth.
What happens if one of the boxes is opened?
It can't be opened, Warren insisted. They can't. I told you it takes both kinds of magic, additive and subtractive, to open a box.
Richard shook him.
What happens?
His eyes still wide, Warren swallowed.
And the gateway between the worlds is opened. The veil is breached. The seal is off the Nameless One.
And the Stone of Tears would be in this world?
Warren nodded as Richard tightened his grip on the robes.
And if the box were to be closed, that would close the gateway, seal the breach?
No. Well, yes, but it can only be closed by one with the gift. It takes the touch of magic to close the gateway. But if one with the gift closes the box, the gateway, then it ruptures the balance because he has only additive magic, and the Nameless One escapes the underworld. More correctly, this world would be swallowed into the world of the dead.
Then how can the box be closed to keep the worlds separated?
The same way the gateway is open with both additive and subtractive magic.
And what about the Stone of Tears?
I don't know. I would have to study.
Then you better study fast.
Please, Warren whined. You don't mean that you know where the boxes are. You haven't found them, have you?
Found them? The last time I saw the boxes, one was opened, about to suck my bastard father into the underworld.
Warren fainted. Chapter 57. Under the impotent rays of the late day sun, an old woman was spreading wood ash on the ice covering the vast expanse of stairs. Kaelin walked past, relieved that the old woman didn't look up to see that the person in the heavy clothes, white fur mantle, and carrying a pack and bow was the Mother Confessor returned to Aedendrill. She was in no mood for starting a celebration tonight. She was exhausted. Already, before coming home to the palace, she had climbed up to the wizard's keep on the mountainside, but the keep was stone cold and dark as death. The shields were in place, though a confessor could enter, but no one was inside. Zed was not there. The keep sat now as the last time she had seen it so many months ago, when she had left to find the missing great wizard. She had found him and helped stop the threat from Darkenrall, but now she needed the great wizard again. Since leaving the Galleon army nearly a month before, she had been struggling to reach Aedendrill and Zed. Storms had raged for days at a time. Passes had been rendered impassable by the weather and snow, forcing them to backtrack and find alternate routes. It had been a frustrating and tiring journey, but the despair at reaching her goal and not finding Zed was withering. Kaelin had made her way through the side streets, avoiding King's Row. The palaces on King's Row housed dignitaries, staffs, and guards of the lands that were represented in Aedendrill. The kings and queens and rulers of those lands stayed in their palaces when they came to address the council. The palaces were a matter of pride for each land, and each was magnificent, although none could begin to compare to the Confessor's palace. Kaelin had avoided King's Row because she would be recognized there, and she didn't want to be recognized right now. She wanted only to find Zed and, failing that, speak to the council. So she headed toward the service area to the side, near the kitchens. Chandelin was out in the forest. He didn't want to come into Aedendrill. The size of the city and the multitudes of people made him uneasy, though he denied it, and claimed only to be more comfortable sleeping outside. Kaelin couldn't blame him.
After being alone in the mountains for so long, she too was uneasy going into the city. Even though she had grown up in this place and knew its streets and majestic buildings as well as Chandelin knew the plains around the Mud People village, the people everywhere made her feel closed in as never before. Chandelin wanted to go home to his people now that she was delivered safely to Adendril. She could understand his desire to be off, but asked him to rest the night and say goodbye to her in the morning. She had told Orsk to spend the night with Chandelin. His presence was wearing, his one eye following her everywhere, his jumping to help her with everything, his constantly standing ready to do her bidding at the slightest indication. It was like having a dog continually at heel. She needed a night away from that. Chandelin seemed to understand. She didn't know what she was going to do about Orsk. A stifling blast of warm air hit her as she went in through the kitchen entrance. At the sound of the door, a thin woman in a sparkling white apron spun to her.
"What are you doing in here? Get out, you beggar!"
As the woman lifted her wooden spoon in a threatening manner, Kaelin pushed back the hood of her mantle. The woman gasped. Kaelin smiled.
"Mistress Sanderholt, I'm so pleased to see you again."
"Mother Confessor!"
The woman fell to her knees, clasping her hands together.
"Oh, Mother Confessor, forgive me! I didn't recognize you. Oh, could spirits be praised? Is it really you?"
Kaelin pulled the wiry woman to her feet.
"I've missed you so, Mistress Sanderholt."
Kaelin held out her arms.
"Give me a hug."
Mistress Sanderholt fell into Kaelin's arms.
"Oh, Chard, it's so good to see you."
She pushed away, tears running down her face.
"We didn't know what had become of you. We were so worried. I thought I might never see you again."
"It has been a long and difficult time. I can't tell you how good it is to see your face again."
Mistress Sanderholt started pulling Kaelin toward a side table.